CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batts with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. He is a Latin American research professor, and I call upon his research often, and he's very generous. So now we're going to speak generally about Latin America and China. There is a case to be made, and it's made expertly by an anonymous writer in The Economist magazine. All documents are unsigned The Economist, nothing particular about this, saying that Latin America has become reliant, dependent upon China as the one source fixes all. The recommendation is to diversify its customers and its sources of income, export income, as well as internal spending. Evan, is this realistic? That's my first general question, frequently asked questions. Is Latin America in a position to make a switch away from China, China, China to other sources or other partners?
John, first of all, I'm always impressed by the degree to which in Latin America all things are complicated, but moreover, the power of perceptions is oftentimes more politically important for policymakers than the reality on the ground. If you look at the trade numbers, for example, although U.S. relations trade-wise are stronger with Mexico and Central America, certainly than they are with South America, overall, for example, last year, the United States had about $709 billion in bilateral trade with the region as a whole. China only had about $330 billion of trade with the region as a whole. Moreover, the terms of trade, the number of exports versus imports, the U.S. is a much better customer for high-value-added Latin American products than China is. As you point out, China principally buys things on the cheap, such as Brazilian soy or Chilean copper or other things, realizes the value added itself, and then sells back expensive products to the region. In many ways, not something that's entirely consistent with Latin America's development. But certainly the pandemic highlighted the difficulties of vulnerability on China. When there were cutoffs in supply chains, that contributed to disruptions in Latin America. And the broader question then is, why, for example, can't Latin America in many ways have more inter-regional trade, to develop itself more? And certainly that's one of the traditional hopes of Latin American, integration efforts and various different organizations. The question of why can't it take better advantage of that goes to a number of things. Number one, Latin America's traditionally suffered from an infrastructure deficit. It's not just the lack of money for infrastructure, but it's the political difficulties and other things that time after time have made it extremely difficult to get viable infrastructure and also viable, interregional trade that produces real value added and not just individual countries, trading with the more developed states, the United States, the EU, or others. Of course, one of the other difficulties is the longstanding political changes turned to populist governments that undermines the desire to invest in Latin America, some of the political differences which impede cooperation. We see, for example, right now how the trade organization Mercosur is pulling itself apart. So, going back to the failed dream of Simon Bolivar, for example, the great, South American, Andean, promoter of a united America. There are many dreams of this, but time and time again, the practical considerations on the ground, tend to cut those dreams short.
The supply chain, much in the news in North America. The question of using the supply chain as a national security national security theme was new to me, but I see what it means now, not just for consumer goods, but for relying upon chips, which are critical to all parts of our economy. Latin America, according to the Economist writer, has an opportunity now in the reawakening from the pandemic to get involved in the supply chain as it has not heretofore. I'm following reporting now. I don't make a conclusive remark. Mexico clearly is part of the recommendation for the supply chain. Is it practical, given the development of ports and, you mentioned, roads, is it practical to look to Latin America to get involved in the supply chain remedy afterwards, after the pandemic, when the U.S. and Europe can find other sources of material and trade rather than two or three ports in China?
It's a great question, John, and reflecting on this, for me, Latin America, not unlike the United States, when a crisis hits, so we have that moment when we all declare, wow, we should be doing things differently. And then we tend to go back for various different reasons to doing things the bad old way that leads us to the next crisis. And clearly, what's happened over the past, especially 20 years, is you've had the development of these very strong integrated supply chains, which largely come from China in one way or another, either through the region or directly to the United States. And, you know, in, you know, January, February 2020, that the shutdown of Wuhan, that the shutdown of China in general, you know, highlighted that. And certainly what's happening right now in the global logistics industry, you know, highlights that even more. You know, what's happening at, you know, in Los Angeles, at Long Beach. I remember that there was a time when a Trans-Pacific container used to cost, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a container. In some places, they're well over, you know, $12,000, $15,000 a container. Again, just to give you an idea of how these bottlenecks have impacted costs and availability, you know, even as we know here in the United States, the, you know, getting, you know, things in not only for companies, but, you know, the, you know, will the Christmas toys come for Johnny and Sue in New York and elsewhere. The problems, however, are that there are various different ways to respond to this. So, you know, the question is whether nearshoring is viable in some areas and it will happen, but in other areas, again, some of the political difficulties, some of the disincentives for investing the needed things, the possibility of alternative ways to manage those risks, such as increasing inventories and taking on a higher inventory cost, which may be more economically rentable than trying to, you know, move an operation to a different, maybe politically risky place. So a long way of saying that there's a lot of, I think, political and academic speculation about nearshoring, and from a policy perspective, it certainly makes sense and it's, you know, would be good for Latin America. But I think there's practical reasons to believe that there will only be selective moves to nearshoring in certain industries and places where it economically makes sense. And in other places, we'll continue to depend not only on China, but we actually import a lot from places like Vietnam and other parts of developing Asia, that will continue for the future as well.
We have about a minute and a half, Evan, and I just want to mention a news item because it's more of the election process in Latin America, but in Brazil. This is a Brazilian congressional panel set to recommend mass homicide charges against President Bolsonaro, asserting that he intentionally let the coronavirus rip through the country and kill hundreds of thousands in a failed bid to achieve herd immunity and revive Latin America's largest economy. Is this electioneering? I don't want to be too cynical here, but it's a puzzlement given the strength of Lula da Silva in the polling. Is that what this is?
Well, John, for me, frankly, it's both. I personally feel that there are significant questions about the way that the President Bolsonaro had handled coronavirus, and I think there are many in Brazil that feel the same way. Having said that, however, it's clear that the person who headed this committee, of which you know, 7 of 11 people on the committee are Bolsonaro opponents, including the committee head, Senator Renan Calheiros. And it's interesting that the accusations, talking about 13 charges against Bolsonaro and charges or recommended charges against 69 other people, that has not even been voted out by the full committee yet, and certainly not by the Brazilian Congress as a whole. And even if it was, those charges would then have to be taken up by Bolsonaro's attorney general, who he himself appointed.
Right.
And so it's probably unlikely that this will lead to anything real in criminal terms. And indeed, as I understand this morning, there's already been an agreement informally to drop the genocide and homicide charges against Bolsonaro. But at the end of the day, Bolsonaro does have serious problems. You know, right now, for the October 22 elections, Lula da Silva is leading him strongly in the polls. Lula would get almost 60% of the vote versus Bolsonaro's 31% if the election were held today. Bolsonaro has 65% disapproval rating. A number of Brazilians want to see him impeached. The economy right now, I understand, is moving into the negative, which does not augur well for the coming year in elections. So probably the bigger concern is that Brazil, because of these political forces, turns to the left in October. And these charges, even if not playing out in criminal terms, you know, just that overall sense of negativity will help to push Bolsonaro's numbers down, not unlike what we saw in the United States.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Dash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.